Triple G, is there anything you'd like to tell Canelo?
Good luck in September.
I've been calling Dana to see if he takes the 200K bet. He hasn't taken it yet.
And I want to, like, fight two more times in the strawweight division, and I would like to fight in 125.
Defending title one twice would be amazing, but I'm going to keep defending it, so I'm going to do it for a long time. I'm going to set the bar high.
Back out to Allen. History title. Bang! Tie game with 5 seconds remaining.
And I have to give the FBI credit. That was so bad what happened originally, and it took guts for Director Comey to make the move that he made.
Practicing this. Ask me all.
I'm a very worldly.
What are you getting? Okay, I forget sometimes. Yeah. Have you gotten your mother a gift yet?
Not a fucking thing. I just realized it. I thought it was like in 10 days or whatever, not this Sunday. And she says she wants like my brother and I to make like hot dogs and be nice. So
that those two things don't go together. If you make someone a hot dog, you're not being nice to them.
Well, she's a real mom. And a real mom, and here's one for all you ladies out there listening, because we have a large female audience. It's okay to admit it. All a mom wants is to be left alone. All they want to do is sleep, not deal with anything, maybe take a bubble bath, shit like that that you think is dumb. They fucking love it. And I know this because I don't have a wife anymore. I don't have any children, but I listen to moms. So, yeah, just take your wife and say, here, baby, here's 10 hours by yourself you can sleep in. The kids and I are going to Chuck E. Cheese.
I'll be working on Mother's Day.
Really?
But, yeah, every Mother's Day. It's like the busiest day, one of the busiest days of the year, yeah. But I usually get out by, like, I don't know, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock usually. So,
she's not your mom. You don't have to do anything. It's your little, ungrateful kids that need to step it up.
Yeah, they're too little. They're not even capable of doing anything.
One of them is halfway to driving.
That's true.
As long as she doesn't die.
That's right.
God, that's the funniest thing I ever fucking saw in my life.
Yeah, they are an interesting team, those two. Welcome to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com. My name is Matt Grady. The other gentleman here is Michael Coughlin, who is going to Yale in just a few short weeks. UFC and Bellator have both been on, I don't want to call it a vacation, but basically a two-week hiatus here. For Bellator, it's going to be 3 weeks. They don't have another show until next weekend in London. But boxing has continued to dominate the news in combat sports. Who would have expected that, just a few months ago? But this past Saturday night in Vegas, Canelo Alvarez defeated Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. by unanimous decision. He really just dominated the fight and beat up Chavez Jr. from the opening bell to the end of the 12th round, essentially. I think most judges scored every round for Canelo, which is very unusual in a boxing match of kind of any level. So after the fight, the big story was they announced that Canelo was going to face Golovkin Triple G in September. They brought Triple G into the ring, and they both got promos using English as second language for the most part. It wasn't the smoothest interview with Max Kellerman kind of going back and forth between the two guys. Canelo had an interpreter. It was a little awkward and clunky, but they're trying. It'll be interesting to see how that one draws, because I say it's a dream fight for boxing fans, but it's a fight that's been talked about for a long time. Triple G's for a while been considered one of the best boxers in the world, but never really had the name, and he's kind of stepped it up. And Canelo obviously has that big Mexican Latino following, so that could be a huge fight for boxing fans come September as well.
Typical liberal bullshit. There's obviously a good red-blooded American that could fight Triple G, but instead we're going to give the job to yet another foreigner. That's bullshit. I mean, is this what America is? We have a guy that doesn't speak English. He only speaks Spanish coming here to fight a guy who is from a part of the world that may or may not be Muslim. I don't really know. Either way, he's not American. He's another foreigner. Two foreigners taking good, hard-earned money away from Americans. I mean, my gosh, you could give your money to these two, or you could give it to the only big-name American boxer out there, Floyd Mayweather. And we all know who really needs that money, people. So,
And Mayweather's a much better guy than both of them.
He's an upstanding citizen. he's good to women. He obeys Sharia law because, you know, he beats women. I'll say this. I didn't watch the fight. I barely remembered it was on. Everything I read was it was your typical boxing fight. For all the praise, rightfully so lauded on the Joshua Klitschko fight, this was the opposite, which is to say it was the norm for boxing. They hyped it up and it sucked ass. Mm-hmm. But Triple G's got his rep. He's obviously in my mind, because I'm not Mexican, he's right there with Joshua as far as like guys. I'm like, oh, when he fights, my interest gets piqued. Like when Canelo Alvarez fights, I kind of know what's happening, but in my brain, he's not elite. He's very good, but he's kind of lost some of his biggest fights and things like that. So like, I don't really care. Whereas Triple G and Joshua feel like they might be special. And so when Triple G's fighting Canelo Alvarez, I think Alvarez is good enough that this is a big... I think it's a step up for Triple G, but I don't really know how their weights are because there's so many fucking weight classes in boxing.
Right.
So I don't know if one of them's moving up like 8 pounds and the other one's dropping 8 pounds or shit like that. But look, it's the biggest pure boxing match that the sport can offer. And that is, accepting out a mixed contest between Floyd and Conor McGregor. And I have a feeling you're going to mention that.
I was going to move on to that in a minute. Couple things to know. Golovkin is undefeated. I think he's a little bigger than Alvarez because, I mean, Alvarez fought Floyd Mayweather at like 147, maybe 149 pounds. So, Golovkin should be the bigger dude in that fight.
What does Golovkin fight at?
He fights at middleweight.
In real world terms.
I don't know.
Boxing bullshit.
I'm trying to figure it out. Well, he fights middleweight. I also know what
I mean, Sam, man, it just definitely does terrorism. So yeah.
But the other thing I was going to say, a lot of people, well, I shouldn't say a lot of people. Some people are actually favoring Canelo because Triple G there's 35 now, and some people think the loss has happened. It's like he's reaching like his peak popularity when it's almost a little too late. One of those sorts where this guy's really long, but because he's been in Europe and a bunch of no name guys that nobody knows, and all guys would dodge him and stuff and try not to. So there's a little bit of that where, like, Canelo's younger, stronger, and might have an edge. And most people think technically Triple G is the better guy, but it might be one of those stories where one guy's still improving and one guy's slowing down a little bit.
My Triple G is that he's obviously, amongst lightly, a famous knock artist. He's got that John Lineker power. But
I mean, the kind of the Alvarez challenge Jr. is if he has to bring a million eyes. This was from his boss, Curry, so going at it. First, the Chavez Jr., the Chavez name. Julio Cesar Chavez's name when I guess Canelo uses Houston next. I was watching his interview, like he was being standing and he was so boring and had like no personality ever off the crowd and pop man every incident. Like, holy, they're really into him. And I don't know if it's a cultural thing or a language barrier or not only Spanish really. But like, I didn't know like, he had much charisma. I love Brandon Moreno.
My friends are Spanish speaking, yeah.
I just feel that vibe where he would really connect with an audience, but he clearly does.
You know, I actually heard the same thing a lot for years with Canelo Alvarez, where...
Yeah, that's...
Chavez.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have talked after the fight.
Well, that's even sadder. Who the fuck emailed me a social media post on Half Guarded? What the fuck am I getting an email for this? I don't know what I'm doing, people. I always heard this thing about Canelo Alvarez, which is that he was never, like, your quote-unquote authentic Mexican. And some of that's because, I don't know if he was perceived as richer or more upper class, or could this become the fact that he's a ginger? You know, he doesn't really look Mexican. He looks more Irish than he does Mexican, of all things. And, you know, you look at the guy, you know, Oscar De La Hoya, love him or hate him, dude looks Mexican. But I think that when it comes to, you know, the show doing a million buys, it's that weird combination of, on some level, I think that Mexico or Mexican fans, if you will, are, you know, a couple decades behind American type of fans, and that they can be very tribal. When I hear all these numbers, all I can think of is, you know, Bruno Sammartino or Antonio Roca or whatever in WWE and, you know, WWF and in the Garden, where it's just this ethnic draw. And that's such a completely abstract idea to me personally, because I genuinely don't give a shit where people are from. Like, you know, I love Anderson Silva, I love Sakuraba, and I love George St. Pierre. You know, they're all fucking different as can be. But I'm also, you know, a well-to-do white dude in America, so I don't have to, you know, play out various fantasies in the cage. Because, you know, if the guy that looks like me loses, well, I still have a job as a lawyer on Monday. So there may be, you know, some of that. And I think it's also probably an indication of what I think a lot of people have seen coming, which is the changing demographics of America, and in particular the changing economic demographics. Whereas maybe 5-10 years ago, there may have been a number of Hispanics in America, but they didn't have the earning power. And now there's a, you know, such a huge percentage of America is of Hispanic or Mexican origin, and so but they've been established enough that they can spend 50 or 60 bucks on a pay-per-view that they know is going to suck ass, but they can still do it, and that's a bit of a change. And, you know, I know the UFC with Yair Rodriguez coming up this Saturday at UFC 211 is hoping for their big star, and you just see it, one company after another. They're all advertising towards Hispanics, and that's not an accident. That's the greatest indication that that's something real, because money doesn't give a shit. Money isn't racist. Money goes, I think there's a saying, maybe Adam Smith, that capital will flow to wherever it is most appreciated. And right now, the money says Hispanic Americans, Mexican Americans, Latinos, they got money to spend, and they don't feel like they're appreciated. Let's give them something. And I think that this past Saturday's pay-per-view may have just been that.
Yeah, and the timing of it was interesting, too, because obviously you had the Joshua Flicko fight last weekend, and they had this million buy pay-per-view this weekend, and it just popped up the weekend where the UFC was off, and UFC, you know, 4,000 shows a year. It's rare, I think, let alone two in a row. So it was a good thing for boxing. I don't really care about boxing and could care less what happened with it, but good for boxing, obviously, over the last 2 weeks. It suddenly feels like it's somewhat hot again. Whether that lasts or means anything, what remains to be seen. I don't think it will, but I kind of have a feeling that Joshua could be a star, and obviously the winner of the Triple G Canelo fight will be probably a huge star coming out of that fight, and, you know, maybe a 500,000 by guy regularly after it.
Yeah, you think, though, you're talking best case scenario, two stars. Like, the UFC has two stars on some of their major pay-per-views. So
yeah, I guess it depends how you define stars. I mean, how many guys does the UFC have that draw 500,000 buys nowadays?
Well, that's true, but they have more than boxing does. But, you know, it doesn't matter, because as a lonely man that likes to watch people hit each other for his own entertainment, I'll take it however I get it. And as long as it's exciting and I feel like that buzz to it, like, boxing, I give a shit about because of the buzz. I want to feel like I'm part of something. I want to get involved in it. I may, you know, I'll watch random shit from Lithuania with some neo-Nazis fighting, and I'll be happy about it. With boxing, I ain't going to watch some boxing match from that same place. So, if boxing's big, fuck, man, I'm happy. It's still fighting.
Sure, I'm with you. On the topic of boxing, you just mentioned it a minute ago. Dana White was on The Herd with Colin Cowherd this week on FS1 and said the following about Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather. And remember what Dana has said in the past about this fight as well when you hear this. It's not getting close at all. I knew this thing was going to be a nightmare to get done, if it can even be done. We'll find out. Obviously, both guys want to fight each other, but what's the deal?
Lie.
Can the deal be done? That's the question. It's not even Mayweather. It's definitely both sides. It's not just Mayweather. It's both sides of this thing are going to be hard to get done. And absolutely, there's going to come a point where I'm done with this. This isn't what I do. This isn't my business. And I'm definitely going to walk away. So Dana's gone from it'll never happen to I'm going to make sure this happens because I want to help out Connor. And now he's almost done with it and washing his hands of it, literally probably 2 weeks later.
Well, not literally. I mean, you can't
wait. It was like 2 weeks ago he said, I'm going to help Connor out and do this favor to him. He's done a lot for us.
He's not literally washing his hands. That's my point.
He could be at the moment, literally.
That's very odd. Look,
could have gone to the bathroom or something and he's washing his hands. That's feasible.
Dana White doesn't wash his hands when he goes to the bathroom. Come
even
on.
Even after he poops. I think most people wash their hands after they poop now, don't they?
Yes. First of all, it sounds weird when you say poop. Take a shit. Also,
I've got a 3-year-old and an 8-year-old. I'm like regressing.
He has people do it for him. That's my point. Look, Dana White's comment. Look at them as far as the era we live in, the Trumpian, in that, you know, he's telling the truth every time he speaks. When, mm-hmm. when he says it's going to make it happen, he thinks he's going to make it happen. And right now, he says it's not going to happen. We are so fucked up as a people that we expect people to always be on message, that everybody's spinning, everybody's clean and sophisticated. But the truth is there really are guys like Dana out there, and Trump in that respect, I guess, where they're almost incapable of lying. And it's not because, like, they're honest people. It's that what's ever on their mind in that moment, yeah, that's the reality. They almost, for super successful people like Dana White, it's odd that he doesn't think ahead. But I think it's because he's got 5,000 things on his plate that he's like, it's going to fucking happen. And then 2 weeks from now, he's like, no, but it's like, fucking Connor is being a bitch, and he just said this stuff, and I don't know. I don't know what's going on. These people are just being bitches, and I fuck these guys. And then a week from now, Connor will be like, Dana, whatever it takes to make it happen, make it happen. And Dana will be like, it's going to happen, guys. We're going to make this shit. We're going to make history. And, you know.
To me, the bottom line is, how are they going to cut up the pie of the revenue of the pay-per-view and the gate and all that stuff? Like, what percent? Floyd, you know, is going to want the majority of the money. UFC wants a chunk, and Connor wants a chunk. So it's going to be a question of how much is Floyd willing to give the UFC and Connor? That's the question. And if it's not enough, Dana will walk away. That's always been the question all along. If UFC and Connor were going to get 90% of everything, the fight would have already happened.
Yeah, it's, you know, and on some respects, it's a giant game of chicken because everybody's going to win. Like, pretend you're playing chicken, but if you crash, you get wealthy for the rest of your life. And that's what we have right here. Because Connor knows that if this fight actually takes place, he's going to be a millionaire so many times over, he can't count it. And Floyd, he doesn't really need the money, but he likes the money. So he's going to get, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9-figure payday. It's so fucking big, I have to, like, count on my hands how many millions it is. So, like, Everybody's going to make money. But if they don't fight, all still okay. Connor got his name out in the media more. He's a bigger star. Floyd got to feel relevant for like another year because he's a fucking old man, isn't going to fight or anything like that. But there is also the reality that happens where if they fight, Connor's a poor kid from Dublin who's probably only had money for about 2 years. So for him, you know, the 37-figure payday is a big deal. So he'll take it. But he's also young enough that he doesn't want to lose because of his pride and shit like that. It'll go away, Connor. Trust me. You get older, you have no pride in your life. And if you're Floyd, you'll make a lot of money. It's almost a sure thing win. But if you were to lose, even on a total fluke, that would be a legacy killer. And when you've got so many hundreds of, like, He has multiple hundreds of millions. More than one. Like, if you, he doesn't just have a million, or 10 million, or 100 million. He has multiple 100 million. So, money can't mean anything beyond that desire to leave a legacy. Again, let's go back to our current president of the United States, Donald Trump. He doesn't need money. He needs a legacy. So, Floyd cares about legacy on some level. And he's got something to lose. So, everybody's going to gain, but everybody could lose. And, I don't know. I just see a bunch of people who are all drama queens. And there's a real short shelf life on this shit. It ain't going to happen.
Yeah. There is and there isn't to me. I mean, if Conor loses a bunch of fights in the UFC, yeah, there's a short shelf life. If Conor wins another one or two fights in the UFC, defend both belts in the UFC, the fight will be even bigger. Like, look at that Pacquiao Mayweather fight that did the 4.5 million buys. Like, Pacquiao got knocked out cold in the middle of those negotiations in a fight, I think. I forget who he was fighting, but he got wrecked. He was flat and starched. Marquez, yeah, thank you. And that fight still was the biggest fight ever. So sometimes dragging it out doesn't really hurt it. I mean, is anybody going to care if Mayweather's 40 or 42 when they fight? If Conor still wins a couple more fights and is still talking shit, could build up even more. Right now, it's just like, I feel like a lot of people see Conor as this new guy who's this trash talker who may not even be that good of a fighter. If he won a couple more fights, it would only help his cause and make that fight do even better at the box office.
Oh, for sure. And, I mean, I will say that I feel like right now is very close to the peak because Floyd is still fresh in people's minds. People still look at Floyd as the best who ever lived and all that horse shit. So, like, if Floyd did a boxing match with anybody, I don't care if it's Alvarez or Triple G, whomever, it would do a really big, you know, number. The further he gets removed from it, while he'll still always be a name, it'll still be a big fight, he does lose a little bit of the physical credibility that comes with being Floyd Mayweather. And if you're Conor, he can go out and win a couple more fights. He'll become a bigger star, but probably not too much bigger. I mean, the dude was a fucking two-division champion at the same time, knocking out people in the first fucking round in Madison Square Garden in front of everybody. This is about as big as you can get, almost. So, yes, it can get bigger. I don't think it can get too much bigger. Like, I think this is the optimal time for it. It's like this year. But, I don't know, it's...
Imagine this. They run back the Diaz fight. He beats Nate, knocks Nate out. Then he beats GSP.
Oh,
let's just say, I know that's far-fetched, but imagine Benny tells Mayweather, and they've already got everything lined up. Mayweather comes in the cage after he beats GSP at some UFC show, and Mayweather and Conor have a stare down. That thing's, like, really huge at that point.
Oh, definitely a level. It's funny, actually, is it that big? All of a sudden, Conor's going to have a... Like, I think if you get to that level of big, Conor's the star. I think if he beats, you know, I mean, if he just go out there and beat GSP, he'd be a bigger star right now than Floyd is. So, it won't happen, probably. But.
No, it's off topic, but I saw them, they didn't make that fight. Like, why didn't they GSP and Conor instead of GSP versus Bisping? Like, why is GSP moving up late? The whole thing is weird, but that's a story for another day, I guess.
Probably don't want to wait until, you know, the next fucking Mayan apocalypse in the calendar to fight.
Well, he's not fighting now. He's been off since November, right? I mean,
and I just
that's
saw
a long layoff for him.
And he's a father.
Did you see he named his kid after himself? I don't like that
gimmick. It bugs you. And
yeah, like, it irks me, actually. Like, it's like so, like, full of yourself.
I think, again, I'm somebody
that... It borderline, like, grosses me out, like, for lack of a better term.
Obviously, I don't have kids. I've thought about what I would name a child.
You wouldn't name your kid after yourself. You wouldn't even do that.
No. Fuck no. Like, I wouldn't do it at all. Like, the closest...
Like, George Foreman's got 7 kids named after himself. What the fuck?
That one, I think, was just a joke after the first one. Like, how far can I push this shit? Like... I'm going to go for it. Like, I got Michael, I got Michelle, I got Mish, I got Mick, I got Mickey, I got all these things. You're like, oh, yeah, you fucking did it. Your kids are screwed up, you egotistical dick. I mean, to me, the only time you ever name your kid after yourself is basically if it's a long-standing family tradition. Like, in the Coughlins, I don't know how long it goes back, but several generations, the firstborn male of the firstborn male was always named John. And actually, I think my uncle Pat fucked up the tradition, John Patrick, and named his first son Casey. Dumbass. But it had gone back.
That's good. Be your own fucking person.
But I understand, like, if you want to connect on some really long level, like, this has gone back, you know, 400 years. We've all been named John. Fine. But other than that, like, we can name your son after yourself. And I feel like it's only men that do this. However, I did watch Gilmore Girls. Yes, Lorelai named her daughter Lorelai as well. She did it just to prove a point. But women don't have this weird-ass shit. And I think that's because women actually give birth. They actually create life. And men are so desperate to create a lasting legacy. They're like, I'll just name the kid after myself. Yeah, that's the same as, you know, pushing a bowling ball out for 8 hours. But, I mean, he's a dick. We know Connor's a dick.
It's just so, like, egotistical, and, like, if I had to guess what he was going to name his kid, it would be Connor.
Connor or something from, like, a mythological figure, like Thor or some shit like that. Like, Connor absolutely, you know what, he would name his kid, like, Finn Balor or something, whatever part of that is, like, the Irish legend. He'd be like, yes, my kid is Finn, the great or Irish boogeyman or something like that. The thing I wanted to add, though, was, and this is very, how should I say this, superficial, and it's not about Jessica Andrade's fat wife, but, boy, is she a load. Connor's wife, and I know she just gave birth, but those pictures they put up, I'm like, oh, that's not very flattering there. Like, I wouldn't want those pictures out there of me, so, I don't know, Dee, maybe don't let your husband put pictures of you without makeup on, because you were pretty before, and I'm like, ooh, huh. Yeah, good thing you locked that down.
It's probably, okay. It's also, like, probably the most, like, difficult, tiring, painful day of your life. You're probably not, no one's looking that great after that.
Yeah, why would you want that photo out there?
Because it's the day your kid's born. You don't give a shit. You're in so much pain and, like, excited, and people are around seeing the baby. There's doctors in and out. You're not really concerned about your picture at that point. That's one of the few days of your life where you probably don't give a shit about how you look in a picture.
Well, Kim Kardashian.
Probably the day your kids are born, and probably, like, the day you're at your own funeral. Those are the days where you don't really give a shit.
Kim Kardashian gave a shit.
Did she? I
actually don't know, but I'm pretty sure she would have. But I will say that, yes, in fairness, that is a very odd day, I feel like, for a woman. It's like the one day of your life where everybody you know, pretty much, like, very, who's very important, knows what your vagina looks like, has watched you shit all over everything, and you don't give a fuck. What a weird life. Like, if everybody I knew gathered in a room, and they're like, all right, Mike, let's see your balls. All right, poop in front of us. And then after that was done, I was like, I'm so happy. I can't believe it. People would be like, what the fuck?
Not everybody shits. That's a myth.
Well, I think my mom did.
Probably when she saw you.
Fuck you. Damn it. That was good.
Thank you. Last week, I know we touched on all of this, but it keeps coming up and coming up in the MMA sphere, as they call it. Disgruntled MMA fighters. I mean, there's always been some bitching, but it just seems to be this growing trend. More and more fighters are going off on Twitter or social media and interviews, whatever. They're unhappy with their pay. They're unhappy with this. Well, there's a few guys we'll touch on here, but I know last week we talked quite a while about Anderson Silva and whether or not he was being ridiculous, asking for the interim title shot, whether or not he'd get it. Dana White has gone on record and said he's refusing to give Silva an interim middleweight title fight, which essentially means he's off the UFC 212 card where he was supposed to fight Kelvin Gastelum.
Did Dana say that he was doing that on the ground of, this is fucking stupid, you dumb shit?
I don't have that information in front of me, but I feel like I would have heard about that quote if that's what he said. But Silva's claim was that if he didn't get the interim middleweight title shot, he was never going to fight again and he was going to retire. So, I mean, technically he's on the shelf indefinitely because he says he's going to retire if he didn't get the title shot. I'm presuming you think Silva will fight again in the UFC?
Yeah, of course he will.
Okay. Fucking... How long? When's it going to be fixed?
He'll fight in July. He'll fight in the fucking UFC 213 there in Vegas because it'll be a big show. And he's a fucking liar. And look, the dumb bitch already agreed to fight Kelvin Gastelum in UFC 212. And that sure shit wasn't going to be for some fucking interim title. So fuck you, Anderson.
Okay, fair enough. And then our new favorite, one of our new favorite fighters. I'm not talking about Derek Lewis. I'm talking about Al Iaquinta.
Oh, I love you, Derek.
He's continuing to rant and rave on Twitter and different places. But last week he wrote on Twitter, he at UFC, cut me, you sissies, which is like an odd use of the English language, I think.
I think Al Iaquinta actually grew up in the Little Rascals, so that makes sense.
He says poop instead of shit also. But then after that, he kind of went dark for a little while. You didn't see anything. People were like, oh, wow, he wants to be cut. He's calling out the UFC, whatever. And then this week, John Morgan wrote an article for MMA Junkie where he quoted an unnamed source from within UFC's upper management who essentially buried Iaquinta for no-showing a fighter summit last minute when they had bought him tickets and had a car lined up for him at the airport to pick him up. He destroyed a hotel room. He complained about how the UFC paid for his knee surgery, but he had to beg for it. This guy in the UFC management claimed this wasn't true. This unnamed source also said Iaquinta was still on a bonus ban, so Iaquinta can't win any post-fight bonuses, whether it's fight of the night or whatever it might be. And Iaquinta responded to this article. He took a screenshot of it or whatever, left the link, and basically called it fake news and said it was bullshit and it was this unnamed source or whatever. So Iaquinta's still going at it with the UFC. He doesn't seem to care. He's got this real estate job going. Just another example of another fighter who's going on social media to complain about basically his boss. I mean, it's interesting because usually if I had an issue with my bosses, I wouldn't start tweeting about it.
Well, yeah, but your job also doesn't involve punching people in the face for money.
Right, but what other business do you go on social media and start bashing the people who pay you?
It's literally only entertainment people, athletes and movie stars.
But you don't really see it like in baseball. You don't see baseball players going online and saying, cut me, you sissies.
Well, most baseball players are making so much fucking money, it's obscene.
Right. I'm just trying to think of soccer players. I don't hear anybody in MLS doing anything like this. I mean,
well, they're all
just a weird
job, but yeah, I understand.
What I'm saying is big picture. This seems to be happening more and more. With more frequency, there's more unhappy fighters, and I don't know if it's the WME, IMG thing, Joe Silva being gone, whatever it is, there's just this trend growing, because Luke Rockhold also made some headlines. He did an interview with Ariel Helwani this week, where he essentially encouraged all the ranked UFC middleweights to go on strike until they figure out the title picture, because GSP is now saying he doesn't want to fight Michael Bisping for the middleweight title, a division that GSP has never even fought in until October, and he's willing to let Bisping pick the date anytime after October. So essentially this entire division with a lot of really good guys, I think Rockhold's lost one fight in 4 years. Granted, he hasn't fought a lot, but it's like he wants a fight. He offered to fight Anderson. Anderson turned him down, and he's pissed off and essentially said, fuck the UFC, a la Mark Hunt a few months ago.
What you just said, though, it highlights all of it. It's a lot of people that, first of all, they are grown men, adult human beings that punch each other in the face for money. We're not talking about Stephen Hawking here. But Rockhold said, I want to fight Anderson Silva, and Silva turned it down. Rockhold is a top, one or two middleweight. If Anderson Silva was serious about I want an interim title or I want a bigger name, that's the fight for you. And if Rockhold really thinks he's worth all this money and shouldn't be fighting for anything else, he wouldn't say, I want to fight the greatest of all time on my current deal. He'd want more money. So by them doing this, what you really see is a lot of guys who are incredibly talented. They're very good fighters, but they aren't draws. No, they're not anti-draws or anything like that. But Luke Rockhold isn't a draw. He's not moving the fucking needle or anything like that. He's not doing Conor numbers. And I think some of these guys think that they should be doing those type of numbers, but they really, they won't. And it was one, they could kind of live in a world of you know, self-delusion before WME, you know, WKRP took over. That's not a bad joke. And I swear I thought turkeys could fly. But now...
Some can.
What?
Some turkeys can fly.
Oh, you missed the joke.
No, but they really can. It's, the joke has to be true.
WKRP was a legendary TV show, but a radio station, a sitcom. And one of their episodes was...
Cincinnati, right?
Yeah, and one of their episodes, what their most famous episode was, they're going to throw turkeys out of a helicopter as a promotional stunt. They threw out all these turkeys, except for they just dropped to the ground and died. But the guy who organized it at the very end of the show goes, I swear to God, I thought turkeys could fly. Anyways, now the WKRP spent $4 billion, everybody thinks, oh, it's worth $4 billion. And it is, but it really isn't. And it's not like they have $4 billion to spend. So they all have this like delusional, oh, well, we're all going to be rich. It's like, no. The guys who were rich got richer, and these other rich people are involved, and the reason that they're rich, because they don't pay people like Luke Rockhold $10 million. They pay Conor McGregor $10 million. Luke, you're going to get $750 if you're lucky, and just enjoy it.
Yeah. It's just this trend is interesting, and you wonder where it's going to go. Because even a year ago, there was all the talk of, you know, these unions starting up or these, like, organizations, the AAA and these different groups, Boris's group. And it's like none of those ever took off, but the fighters seem even more unhappy now than they did 6 months a year ago.
It'll go away.
Just bizarre they can't get their that's a question. Will it go away?
It'll go away because what you have right now are these middle ground fighters. These are people that started the sport when they're – like most of them started when it wasn't big. Like it was kind of known, but these are guys who probably most of them started their careers, I'll say, post Ultimate Fighter 1, you know, 12 years ago. And so they've kind of grown with the sport. They've seen the sport grow. They know it used to be two and two – you know, $2,000 to fight, $2,000 to win type of shit. And now they're getting a lot more money, and they're getting just enough money that they feel emboldened, like they can, like, stick it to the man and fight for themselves. But they're not getting Conor money, where they're like, I don't give a fuck, man. I'm making seven figures. Fuck this shit. I'm rich. So I think that some of them, because they kind of grew with the sport, they have this mentality of, hey, I helped build this, I should make more money, and maybe they should. Whereas the next generation of guys, they will be brought up with the idea that, yes, your first UFC fight is 5-5, then you get 8-8, then 13-13, and shit like that. They won't have any concept that everybody used to make nothing. They will live in a world where the opening act guy gets $5,000 to fight, and the main event guy gets $5 million to fight. But at one point, obviously, the opening card guy got like $500 to fight, and the main event guy was getting like $5,000 to fight, so it was a lot closer. So once the UFC gets past this readjustment period, the problems will go away. It doesn't mean it's right, but
you think this would have happened either way if they didn't sell, though?
Yeah, I think that the economics of it all. You know, WME, it's an easy target because they're not the MMA guys, and They publicly went out and said, this is how much it's worth. Before, I mean, let's face it, when these rumors started a year ago, it's almost exactly a year ago, that UFC is going to be sold, I thought, it's not going to be sold. Like, there's too much money involved. It's not going to happen. And when I heard these billions and $4 billion, I'm sitting there going, are you out of your fucking mind? That's more than any fucking sports franchise on the planet is going for. So I'm like, there's no way it's worth that much. But then it was, because my dad taught me things are only worth what people will pay for them. And it turns out the UFC is worth that much money. And all of a sudden, everybody went, hold on a second. This thing is worth $4 billion. And I'm getting paid $15,000 to get knocked the fuck out. Oh, come on now. Let's be serious. Especially, again, the lower level guys who are grateful to get $10,000 are like, I don't care. But if you're, we've seen a number of guys who are not main event, you know, Anderson Silva level. There's quite a few guys who are pretty good fighters. I'll say like the Anthony Pettis level guys who are getting maybe $100,000. Sometimes some of them less than that, and they're rightfully probably thinking to themselves, "Wait, I'm not lower than that guy over there, and he's getting way more money, and they just sold this shit for $4 billion. Come on, just throw me a bone or two here. We'll make it work."
Yeah, I find it interesting that so many fans, the initial knee jerk reaction is always, defend the fighters. Yeah, they're getting hosed. They deserve more money. The UFC sucks. They're cheap. And it's just interesting, the anti-UFC backlash, when you compare it to every other promotion in the world, that they're still, they've got more fighters employed. They give them more benefits. They have better drug testing. All that shit that the UFC does well, they have fighter summits, and they try to help guys with retirement. And some of it might just be pandering, you know, political correct bullshit, but they seem to put in some good faith effort that no other cage fighting company in the world does. And some of it's economics. These other companies are small and they can't afford it. I get that. But at the same time, it's like, it's not all bad with UFC. Making them wear a Reebok shirt instead of Condom Depot isn't the end of fucking world. And just fans are blind to that. It's just this, they're cheap, they suck, and they hear these fighters complaining and bitching. You never hear the guys like Demetrius Johnson saying, yeah, I'm pretty happy. I'm living a pretty good life, even though I draw 100,000 buys on pay-per-view. I'm pretty well off. You never hear that story. You hear the Anderson Silvas, the L. Iaquintas, the Mark Hunts, the Luke Rockholds, the Nate Diazes, all these guys who are bitter and unhappy with what they're getting. That's what gets in the news, and that's what kind of sways, I think, public opinion with the UFC, you know, their upper management and the pay structure and everything else.
And I understand why that happens. If you're in the news, that's a better story to tell than fighter is very grateful for opportunity. Like, who wants to watch that? And, like, even if you're the most hardcore laissez-faire, Adam Smith is my god, libertarian, economic guy, nobody wants to root for the guy with money. Like, everybody roots for the guy with less money, and it's fine. But, you know, it'll work itself out, because let's face it, to all you fighters listening, and there's lots of you, I assure you, wearing something from Reebok, just as effective at not getting someone pregnant as Condom Depot. That's a good fucking joke. That's a good joke, because it's so... Oh, fuck off.
Damn it. No, I get it. I mean, nobody wants to bang anybody wearing Reebok stuff.
Exactly.
I understood the joke. I just was not impressed with your performance.
Well, fuck you, George. You French-Canadian fairy.
I'll fight you anytime after Halloween. Maybe there's like an alien thing around Halloween he's worried about. We got a couple USADA stories. We haven't done any of those in a while. This one's a little obscure, but I like it a lot, so bear with me here. There's a guy named Ricardo Abreu. He was a middleweight fighter in the UFC. He was suspended for 4 years by USADA after failing a drug test while serving a previous USADA suspension for a positive test. This was announced last Friday. The second anti-doping policy violation resulted in the sanction length being doubled. So it went from 2 years to 4 years. Abreu's 33, and he tested positive for nandrolone metabolites and other 19 NOR steroids stemming from a sample collected on December 21st, 2016. So basically, he was out of the UFC, suspended. They did a random test on December 21st, and he popped again, which is like, if you're suspended, why are you juicing? And then he was quoted as saying he had been depressed and unhappy, and that's why he was taking steroids, which I don't think helps with depression. I mean, I could be wrong. I'm not a psychiatrist.
I am.
I feel bad for your patients.
When the
drug test was taken, Babe Ruth was already serving a 2-year suspension. After failing the second test, he informed the UFC and USADA that he was retiring. So that way, he doesn't have to get tested anymore. He would have had to get tested for 4 years randomly on a suspension to fight again in the UFC. So if he ever wants to fight again in the UFC, he would have to get back in the USADA pool for 4 years before he could fight again.
Yeah, he's a fucking moron.
That story is insane.
I mean, he got popped, fine. I don't begrudge anybody who gets popped. Everybody wants to cheat. Everyone trying to get an edge. That's the name of the game. Fine. Right. So be it. God bless you. You're going to hell. But once you're on suspension for 2 years, first of all, you fuck up major if you get a 2-year suspension. Like, nobody gets 2 years. Fucking, you say, my dick doesn't work. You get 6 months. That's how it goes with USADA. But he got the suspension. Fine. There's no reason to keep taking shit. You're not fighting. Just fuck. Like, if he got popped like 6 months before suspension was up, I'd be like, whatever. He's not very good. He's got to get back on the gas. Blah, blah, blah. No, he just got suspended, and then he did it again. And for the whole depression shit, I mean.
Let me read his quote to you. He says, "I already had a 3-year-old son. My wife was pregnant, and I had no idea if we would have money the next month. I was afraid, and that fear dominated me. I was already a little depressed, and that depression only got bigger. I was afraid of everything. I had no courage for nothing, no energy. I thought nothing would work. I started to go down." All right, I'm going to start juicing. That'll help things. If you have no money, don't spend money on steroids.
Yeah,
fuck.
That explains why you might have done it the first time, not the second time, you raid monkey motherfucker. Like, just shut the fuck up. It's just so stupid. Because, again, and I can say this, you know, it says you before, but if somebody that goes to a psychiatrist has to pay money to get his pills so he doesn't, you know, go crazy-er, you know, like, one of the big fears I've ever had in my life about steroids and why I've never, well, part of the reason I've never done them is I don't know where the fuck you get them. Like, I don't know where people get a lot of illegal drugs. I'm like, oh, really? Okay. But one thing I've always considered is my mental health is very important to me. And I've always been...
Is it not for some people?
No, it's not. Like, you don't probably think about your mental health every day the way that I do.
No, I'm sure I don't, but I mean,
no, but
most people, it's probably pretty important, right?
Again, I wake up and I spend every single day of my life and I'm thinking, I want to try to reduce my dependence on Xanax. I don't want to have to take as much as I did before. Like, I'm always, like, to me, the number one reason to not take steroids, and it's not even close, would be the mental health aspect. My guess is you probably wouldn't put that in number one on your list, which is, you know, oh, I might feel a little bit of anxiety or depression. For me, anxiety and depression, it's like touching fire. So I wouldn't want to fuck around with it. So the idea that anybody that would have real issues about that would be like, oh, I felt depressed, I'm going to take more fucking, you know, steroids. No, you just don't do it. Like, I'm terrified of TRT or anything just because of the possible effects of my mental health. It's a big deal for me. But, I mean, this guy's just a liar. He's just an idiot. He's already suspended, and he thought, I don't know how I'm going to provide for my family. Well, given the steroids are fine. They're probably a little cheaper in Brazil, but everything's cheaper in Brazil because Brazilians are poor. So he's just a juice monkey, and he isn't very good at what he does in life, so he cheats. And I bet his wife is unhappy because of his small testicles. Yeah.
Okay. Then the other one that came out this week was the story regarding Kelvin Gastelum, who has really been on the rise in the UFC. He's got a lot of good wins at middleweight. He was on that retirement run. He was going through, you know, Tim Kennedy and Vitor Belfort, and he was supposed to fight Anderson Silva on this upcoming show in Brazil.
Tim Kennedy did not retire. Tim Kennedy yeah. decided to rededicate himself to protecting America and all of our freedoms from evil. That's what happened. It's not that he sucked as a fighter or anything.
He said he's excited to work for Donald Trump.
Fucking moron.
Can you imagine? I can't imagine ever saying that.
I totally get, like, oh, I love my country. I want to be a soldier and all this stuff. But, like,
I wouldn't be excited to even work at Mar-a-Lago as, like, a busboy.
Yeah, like, no matter how much you like Donald Trump, like, he's not somebody you're like, I would go into battle for that man. Like, there's a lot of generals out there, but like, yeah, I'll fucking die for that guy. But Donald Trump, you're like, really? The dude's gonna go, oh, I'm so sorry, and then fuck his supermodel wife on a pile of money.
So anyway, Gastelum has been issued a 90-day suspension and a 20% fine by the Brazilian MMA Sports Court, which sounds ludicrous. After failing a drug test for marijuana on the day of his UFC fight against Vitor Belfort in March, the court is now saying that Gastelum has changed his version of the facts. Apparently, Gastelum entered into like a plea agreement. The court confirmed on Sunday. Then hours later, the UFC fighter vowed to never fight in Brazil because all they want is money. So essentially, I don't know how these Brazilian courts work, but when I hear the word plea, it sounds like essentially he admitted he was guilty and was trying to get this like reduced sentence. But now he's going back and saying he's never going to fight in Brazil because they're bullshit and all they want is the money from his fine. Then in an interview, Gastelum said he stopped smoking marijuana 3 weeks before the fight like he usually does for every fight, yet he still failed the drug test. So after that, I don't know if you saw this, this Brazilian court, MMA sports court,
yeah,
wrote out this long laundry list of what Gastelum did wrong. So I'm just going to go through a couple of these with you. He initially told them that he used a medication that had THC, in other words, for medicinal use only. Today he changed his version and says he smoked. He claims that he has a license to use marijuana in California. However, he never presented that license to us. His license is only valid in California since each state and country has its own laws. In addition to not submitting his license, he never informed the name of the medication, the dosage, and name information of the doctor and why it would be necessary for him to use the substance.
The name of the medication is marijuana, fuckfaces.
I'm just telling you what this Brazilian MMA court is saying. Finally, there are innumerable arguments that he manifests that have no foundation and are supported by lies. To make it worse, he claims that he smoked 3 weeks before the fight. That dosage, far superior, denies that thesis. And this is, again, in what they wrote in their language. I'm just reading this verbatim here. And this sounds like something I would say off the cuff. It sounds weird. An athlete to seek for a plea agreement, sign it, agree with everything, and then go to the media to complain only about the fine. Professional athletes have the power and duty to be an example. Fans can't be fans of bad examples. Thousands of people, including children, might have as a reference or incentive to use drugs associated to sports as something beneficial or to succeed.
Smoke it up, kids.
So fucking ridiculous. That whole thing, obviously, it's some guy in Brazil wrote it in English and probably... whatever, a little bit of it's going to be off, it's going to be a little wordy, it's not going to be perfect, whatever, I'm okay with that. But the whole thing is so dumb, because on top of it, they turned Gastelum's win against Belfort into a no contest. It's like, for Weed, he doesn't get that win. Like, obviously he wasn't high in the cage when he beat the shit out of Vitor Belfort. Like, he destroyed Belfort, looked like a killer. And now he's suspended, he's gone for 90 days, and it's just like, like, most of the world is changing their mind about marijuana, and it's whatever, medicinal or recreational is becoming legal. And, I mean, that's the trend, and eventually pot will be legal everywhere. But just, like, MMA is so far behind in it that they're basically suspending him, fining him, taking his win away because he might have smoked pot a few days before the fight. And Gastelum claims on top of it was 3 weeks before, like he always does.
Honestly, it could be 3 hours before, and it probably wouldn't matter. And a lot of that's just, we've been over this. Not just you and I, but the world has. We know what, everybody that has a fucking brain knows what the, what, how, what the deal is. This sounds to me like, it's probably racist, but the Brazilians are just fucking dumb people who aren't sophisticated and don't understand how the world works. Because I get the distinct impression that Kelvin was like, one of him or his, you know, representatives, proposed a settlement. And said, like, what if we say this, this, and this? And you'd be like, okay, we'll go with that. But it didn't come to be. And then somebody in Brazil is like, well, but you said it during our private meetings. You're like, I'll admit to this. And it's like, no, that's how you work with a settlement. I mean, the dude smoked some weed. The full idea that, it was medicinal. Really? When the Brazilian commission says that, and they say, well, he didn't present to us that he had the medical card, mm-hmm. right? Therefore, it implies that if he had presented it to them, it would have been appropriate. That they would have said, oh, you have a prescription for this. We will not fine you or suspend you. But we know that's bullshit. Like, I'm sure he has a card, but even if he doesn't have a card, if he's in a, he either has a card, who's legal, or he's in a state where it's legal to do it whenever you want, I don't give a fuck. Like, it's stupid. You know what? It doesn't matter. What do you get, 90 days? Mm-hmm. 3 months? That's a fucking, barely a training camp. This is so stupid. It's just a bunch of dickheads blowing each other, trying to make themselves feel good about, oh, look how smart we are. We're just exercising our power. Fuck off, dickheads. Get a life.
Yeah, it's weird, too, because USADA's the one that did the test and caught it, but now it's this Brazilian commission making the ruling because the fight was in Brazil. You know what I mean? It's just weird. It's like a totally different country, totally different rules and laws, and like, how does the Brazil commission compare to Nevada or any other state in the United States, I guess?
This would be the fucking weird. Is this the same Brazilian commission that is like, hey, Jose, no, we don't know if that guy's real. Just hold on a second. We'll give you a couple days, then we'll give you a piss test.
Yeah.
Brazilians are horrible nationalists when it comes to sports, so we should all be grateful when they lose. The shit that could one day be used against you when somebody's like, so, Mr. Grady, when he said this horrible thing, why didn't you immediately say no and then resign forever? It's tough to explain. Nobody really believes
it. While he's talking, I'm always trying to think of my next segue. That would just be my excuse. And that would be believable, I think. There's rumors swirling around about Chuck Liddell and Matt Hughes returning to MMA, not to fight each other, but potentially to get, you know, in the cage again. Scott Coker has gone on record saying he'd be interested in talking to either guy about fighting in Bellator. Do you think either of them will ever come out of retirement?
Nope.
If you had to see one of them come back, who would you choose?
If I had to see one of them and who is the same person?
Both of them are in a room and get to pick one.
Okay, if I had to pick somebody and who I think is also most likely, it's Matt Hughes.
Okay, you think Hughes is more likely to come back?
I think he's younger, hasn't had as many crazy knockouts, and his style is such that he could convince himself, I can go in there and, you know, hold down Ben Henderson for a couple rounds.
Okay. And do you think they'd be more likely to come back in Bellator or in the UFC?
Well, a year ago, I said Bellator. These days, with WMEI, I don't know. Those fuckers will explode anyone, but probably. Actually, I feel like Matt Hughes is more likely to come back in Bellator, and Liddell is more likely to come back in
really?
UFC.
Okay.
I just feel like Chuck has a real close relationship with Dana, and that's my only reasoning.
Because I think Liddell is more damaged than Hughes, kind of like what you were saying, all those knockout losses where he just got dropped, whether it was Rampage or Rashad, whichever one you want, Shogun, whichever one you Rich Franklin, whoever it was who knocked him out. Matt Hughes doesn't really have that. I mean, he's got a couple knockout losses. That last BJ Penn fight wasn't good, but I could see Hughes coming back and give him BJ Penn again. You know what I mean? Run that fucker back one more time. People would watch that. That would be one of those nostalgia fights. Like, I don't think they're going to be able to get Matt Serra to come out of retirement and fight Hughes, but those are really the only two guys you'd want to see him fight in the UFC is maybe Penn and Serra. Who else is that?
That's because Matt Hughes isn't going to go up to heavyweight to fight Serra.
If I had to guess, Hughes will probably come back at 185 anyway, but if he could get down to 170 to fight BJ, that would be okay. To me, both of them, though, are probably better off in Bellator because, again, they can put him in there with anybody of any level, a new guy, an old guy, whatever it might be. I mean, obviously, you don't know what Rampage is doing, but they could run Rampage Liddell again, and that would draw huge. They could do Liddell and fucking Fedor. That would be big.
Tito.
Tito probably still is scared of Liddell even now. Liddell and Chael Sonnen. I mean, there's some potential fights that could draw. And it's against older guys who aren't very good anymore either.
There are fights for Chuck, but let's face it.
Did you see that picture of him?
There should be.
He's like, he looks like he's all juiced up. He looks better than he ever had.
That's probably why he won't be able to pass a drug test. Of the two of them, though, I can see Hughes being more successful because Chuck has a style that...
He's going to get knocked out.
It's not that he's going to get knocked out, but his whole career has been predicated upon his ability to say, I'll stand and trade. Hughes, 10, 15 years ago, he knew, I don't want to get punched in the face. So he's developed a style to avoid face punching, and Chuck didn't. So at least Hughes could come in there, and he might get knocked out, probably would get knocked out. But at least he would have the game plan of, I want to avoid getting knocked out. Whereas Chuck, his game plan is, I'm going to go in there and throw some fucking leather and bang whoever the blonde porn star of the month is.
They could even do, I was thinking of who Hughes could fight in Bellator. I mean, they've got Koscheck. I mean, there's a couple older guys even at welterweight. Like you said, even Ben Henderson. I mean, Henderson's small at 170 and hasn't looked good. There's some fights there that might work. I mean, obviously, you don't want to see Hughes in there with, Paul Daly or Rory McDonald or any of those top Bellator welterweights. But there's probably an older guy or somebody in there, maybe even 185 they could find for him. But I don't want to see either guy fight again. It's over. It's like both of you guys are in your 40s and you didn't look good when you were in your mid-30s. Let's move on.
Yeah, and I hope they don't, but I will save the two of them. If there was ever a chance for one man to dramatically rearrange the MMA landscape, it's Chuck. Because he could go to Bellator. It doesn't matter if he loses. He could fight Rampage. He could fight Tito. He could fight Wanderlei. Those three fights would be rematches of shows that did gigantic bursts in the UFC. Throw in Chael at the end. You could have a 2-year run there with Chuck where you just do these huge ratings because everybody would tune in and you could use it to build stars a la Hulk Hogan and WCW. I don't think it'll happen. I really hope it doesn't. But if this, when I say I hope it doesn't, I'm being full of shit. Like, I don't know Chuck. I don't know him from Adam. I don't want to see any human being really get fucked up, but if somebody's going to get fucked up, might as well be from my
name. Yeah, I know we've gone around this a bunch of times where we almost talk philosophically about old men fighting each other. But that there's some freedom of choice if they want to do it and they can get paid and they think it's worth it. And they've got their faculties. Who am I to say that it's wrong? But it's just like, I've watched a lot of fighting, and I've seen a lot of guys get knocked out multiple times, and they're just not the same. And you hear all this stuff about CTE, and you hope they don't do it for their own well-being 20, 30 years from now. But ultimately, they're grown men, and they're going to make their own choices, and there's a market for it. As long as people are willing to pay for it and they're going to watch it, these guys can get paid to do it. So it's not going to stop until people turn off the TV, which people will watch Chuck Liddell fight anybody. Imagine if Kimbo was still around. Holy shit, would that fight be huge.
Dude, if somebody said that on Friday you could watch Chuck Liddell inside of a cage fight a lion, you would watch it. That's how we are. We have not progressed from the
And I mean, you can play it off. It's like, it's his life. He can do whatever he wants. It's up to him. Who am I to judge?
It would be all. I mean, if somebody's like, a grown man is going to fight a lion to the death, I would fucking watch it. I would know it was like, oh, this is really awful. But through one eye closed, I'd be like, holy shit, that's a grown man and a lion. Oh, look at that shit. Let's go for it. Yeah.
I don't think a lion will tap, though. According to BJPenn.com, which is a reputable news site, UFC 214 is shaping up. I have not been able to confirm this with, like, a real site anywhere, but BJPenn.com is saying that Daniel Cormier versus Jon Jones is official for UFC 214, and a fight with Lady Cyborg is still in the works for that show.
Oh, that's a lie.
Which part?
If it's official, the UFC announces it. That's what official means.
Anyway, they say it's official. And obviously, Jones isn't going to take that tune-up fight if this report is true.
Yeah, I mean, it might be true, but it's a bait, fake news. Fuck that term. It's whatever. It's BJPenn.com. We know what they are, so they're just playing the odds, and oh yeah, it's gonna happen. And shut the fuck up, assholes. The UFC will let us know when it happens.
They will, absolutely. I think they'll probably promote that fight and let us know. Former WSOF lightweight champ Justin Gaethje is officially signed with the UFC. I use the word officially again. And I think we've probably talked about him here and there. He did really well in WSOF. Good fighter at lightweight. Personally, I don't think he's going to get into the top five. He might be top five, but barely. How do you think he'll fare against a higher level of competition in the UFC?
We've talked about it before. I think he's probably like near an Eddie Alvarez type, where he'll be good, compete. Actually, I think he's a little below.
And Alvarez was lightweight champ.
Yeah, so I can't really give him that credit. But I think AG's a UFC level fighter. He'll do good. I don't think he'll do great. I don't think he'll change the landscape of the world. But he'll get a win or two, and that's a good thing to do in your life, I guess.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see who he fights first. I hope he gets somebody good, and he's an action fighter. Most of his fights are always fun. He'll stand and bang with anybody, so hopefully it's not a boring, dull fight for his debut. Michael Venom Page is out of next weekend's Bellator card against Eric Anderson due to a knee injury. I don't know if you knew he was going to be on that show, but it's not happening any longer.
That sucks. I know him and like watching him fight.
Okay, I'm sorry to disappoint you. This weekend we have UFC 211. It is coming from the American Airlines Center in Dallas, Texas on Saturday night, May 13th.
You gotta do the show for a minute. I gotta go to the bathroom. Just talk about, James Holmes. Bye.
I hope he's okay. So, yeah, we've got UFC 211 this weekend. Main event is Stipe Miocic versus Junior Dos Santos 2. The original fight was actually won by Dos Santos by decision. The fight went five rounds, was a pretty good fight. the question is, how much has Dos Santos lost since that time? Obviously, he's been in some wars throughout the course of his career, especially the Cain Velasquez fights. I mean, those things went five rounds twice, and he got beat up really bad and looked like a different person after each fight, facially anyways. Then he had that five-round fight with Stipe. Then he's got the loss to Overeem, where he lost by TKO. And now he's got a win over Ben Rothwell, which was over a year ago. So Dos Santos hasn't been real active lately, and he's probably got more miles on him than Stipe. But that is the headliner, and Mike will probably be back any moment to discuss this card coming up. Trying to see what else is going on here. The co-main is Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Jessica Andrade. We've also got Damian Maia versus Jorge Masvidal, Frankie Edgar versus Yair Rodriguez, and Christoph Jotko versus Dave Branch. I think I hear a puggle. Puggles are terrible, terrible animals. Never buy a puggle. If you take one bit of advice ever from me or this show, do not get a puggle.
They're the best dogs ever.
How many different dogs have you had? A Dalmatian and a Puggle. I don't consider you an expert on dogs.
A Dalmatian and two Puggles, I'll have you know. And I've watched in...
My Puggle pissed on the rug today. It was in a weird...
That says your
no,
fault.
No, it wasn't.
Yes.
I'm hearing
you
myself.
You didn't train it.
No.
You have to train it.
You can't train an autistic Puggle.
Well... If you have a tarred dog, I can't deal with that. I have two dogs that are very smart. Who are always looking at
you. You talk about stepping on their poop in your basement and getting it between your toes.
That happened once.
It's weird you talk about it so frequently.
Well, I exaggerate. All right, they're good doggies, aren't you? He's a good dog. Oh, yes, he's a good doggy. He's a good dog. Ah, yeah.
Jessica Penne just got flagged by USADA. We finally have a woman getting flagged. Yeah.
Really?
While I was talking off the cuff, I was also going through Twitter trying to find things to talk about, and I couldn't find anything until you just got back. I'm like, ah, I wish I knew that.
I just watched her get her ass beat by Joanna Jędrzejczyk.
Yeah, she's lost a bunch of fights, hasn't she?
Yeah, she kind of
sucks. Well, and she's... What is she... I'll be curious to see what she's taking.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, what is she, a lesbian?
She got flagged by USADA for being a lesbian? That would be an amazing drug test if they could figure that out. Let's see.
Oh, that would fuck with the world, wouldn't it?
You
have come back and you are not the father and you're gay. Huh, look at that.
Yeah, Penne has lost three straight fights. That's right, she lost to Danielle Taylor, of all people, who's doesn't even have a Wikipedia page yet. By unanimous...
Cute black chick, though. Yeah.
She lost by unanimous decision to Danielle Taylor. Then she got knocked out prior to that by Andrade, and knocked out prior to that by Joanna. So she must have got on the juice coming off two straight losses for Danielle Taylor and still lost. That is...
She probably was depressed, okay?
Yeah, we gotta find out what... Oh, hang on. There's more to this. Jessica Penne, first UFC athlete flagged for potential doping violation following biological passport review.
Wow.
I don't even know what that means. But
biological passport is a system put in place by a WADA, actually. And it's basically, they will take, how do I put it? Every human being has their own unique level of testosterone, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, John Cena has more than I do, but I have more than my mom. And so with a biological passport, it's the only birth certificate.
Probably could have gone with me, but go ahead, yeah.
I was being honest. So with the biological passport, they basically look at your DNA or your genome or whatever you want to fuck call it, and they will say, okay, this person has 100 testosterone in their body, and that's what they should have, and that's their baseline. And what they do is they then compare it every couple of years. So if that baseline is off, they can be like, you're cheating. And then you can't say, no, I'm not a cheater. I just naturally have more testosterone than other people. So it's a way to basically keep track of, in theory, what your human natural levels should be. So you can, again, you can't say, no, I'm a super athlete, that's why I have so much testosterone.
Where are you? How do you know this? Like, there's never been a case of this.
The Olympics do it all.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's a very common practice for international athletes and again, WADA, the Olympic Committee, and stuff like that. Because, again, John Cena is, we'll say, 3-1 TE ratio. I'm 1-1. So, yeah, if John Cena is always 3-1, you're like, all right, you're fine, you're honest. But if I'm always 1-1, and then one day I show up as 3-1, I may not flag as cheating, but they can look at it and go, no,
right,
your ratio, you went up, you know, 300%.
It's weird. This has never come up before, though. No.
Yeah.
Hundreds, maybe a thousand fights that USADA has been testing for going into fights, plus all the random ones, no one's ever fluctuated.
To me, it says that. I kind of liken it to, we see this every once in a while, where people start getting popped for different things, and you go, huh, why did that never come up? I would guess this is a...
The test is better now, maybe? Maybe, yeah?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I would guess that they have a better test now, and all this, so they're going to probably catch more people. You watch in the next 3 months, I bet this isn't the last time.
Yeah, so, I mean, it is essentially what you said. I'll just read from this article. I'm not accusing you of that, but...
You should, yeah.
Penne fought on April 22nd, 1 month after the test in question, where she lost a unanimous decision to Daniel Taylor. It was her third straight loss. While the March 20th sample was initially reported as negative, a review of Penne's biological passport, which according to the WADA is used to monitor selected biological variables over time that indirectly reveal the effects of doping rather than attempting to detect the doping substance or method itself. Essentially, a variance in the biological passport detected over time can trigger additional screening, such as carbon isotope ratio test, to determine the presence of a synthetic substance in the body, even at low levels, or if the substance itself can't be directly identified. So, I mean, it's just what you said. I'm just surprised. I didn't even know that was an option until, I guess, somebody got popped for it.
Yeah. I know that, again, with the Olympic testing and stuff like that, because it's come out a couple of people from, I think, 2012, maybe even 2008, had their medals taken away because they will hold their samples for several years in case, you know, again, we have better tests, and then they go, but, oh, well, you were just using something that was test-proof, but we have better tests now, and now you're guilty. So I'm surprised that USADA does this. I feel like a lot of fighters will not get the message from this, and that message should be very clear, which is you're in a lot of fucking trouble. They are keeping your shit, and they are testing it and looking to see if you really cheated. So you're all fucked. They're all fucked on this.
Well, I mean, if you're cheating, yeah, you are fucked, which you probably should be. I mean, to me, this is, if you want to get, I mean, there's obviously two sides to this thing. There's the stuff where people get screwed over, where they're unknowingly taking something or they're whatever. Something caused the test to be flagged and they weren't intentionally going out of their way to cheat. And then there's stuff like this where people are still slipping through the cracks, cheating, finding ways to beat the system. The drugs are always better than the tests. If you want the sport cleaner, if you don't want people on drugs, roided up, punching each other in the head, this is a good thing. I know there's a school of thought where it's invasion of privacy and it's not fair and the tests don't always work and people are proven guilty when they're really innocent and stuff. But I'm kind of okay with it. I this shit's dangerous enough as it is, and I don't think it needs to be any more dangerous. These guys are athletes who train all the time to beat each other up, and I don't think they need any artificial help to do it.
I completely agree, and I imagine most people think, hey, guys, talk about the pay-per-view, because fight fans don't actually care about health.
Yeah, and I sound like a pussy saying that. Just let them bang. All right, so we've got UFC 211 this weekend. I talked a little bit of Steve Avers, Junior Dos Santos. Obviously, this is a rematch. Dos Santos beat Stipe a few years ago, unanimous decision, five-round fight where both guys kind of beat the hell out of each other. I don't think people remember it as a classic, but it was a good action fight. The question is, how much steam has Dos Santos lost since then, and has Stipe improved? Dos Santos has a few losses, bad losses in his career. The Cain fights in particular seem to take a serious toll on him, those two five-round fights. Then he also got knocked out by Alistair Overeem. And then a year ago, he beat Ben Rothwell and hasn't fought since then. And the Rothwell fight wasn't real impressive. I mean, he won the fight. It was clear he won the fight, but it was a lot of jabs, keeping the distance. He didn't really engage a whole heck of a lot. He kind of just outpointed Rothwell. So I really favor Stipe in this fight, but both guys throw hard. It's the heavyweight division. Anything could happen. But if I had to pick one guy or the other, I'm going to go Stipe.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The first fight was very close. Either guy could have won it. Stipe got dropped at one point, but he also came on strong. I think there was a third round he got dropped. But in the latter ones, he showed some cardio. He was able to clip Dos Santos a couple of times. So they were kind of, you know, 50-50 then. Dos Santos has only gotten older. Stipe is only gotten better. I don't think that Stipe's gotten so much better and Dos Santos has gotten so much worse that I can confidently pick Stipe, but I would favor him to win the fight, but I wouldn't, to me it's one of those, you know, 51-49 type of deals, because let's face it, Stipe, you know, he had the great fight with Verdum, looked like a god, and then he fought Overeem and he was getting shit beat out of him by Overeem for a while. So,
yeah. Yeah, and he tapped out to that guillotine, too.
Wow. We've all been there when we just tapped out, but only the person choking us knew that it was a tap out. So, but, hey, Stipe doesn't have to worry about the guillotine, probably from Dos Santos. You know, Dos Santos is obviously, he's a striker, but he's not your Mark Hunt type of striker. He's a little more technical than most people. And I think that that is a skill-based fighter, and skill-based fighters don't aid. So, honestly, to me, it's a pick'em fight, but with the difference being the age, both, you know, in real-world age and fight age, I think it favors Stipe, so I'll go Stipe.
Yeah, to me, JDS is an old 33 years old, because, I mean, Stipe is technically a year older, but I don't know. Those fights with Cain, those are like the most brutal fights you'll ever see of a guy just getting pounded on like for 25 minutes. Those things were like the pictures of JDS's face afterwards or like any other you'll ever see. Like, looks like he was taken out into the streets and beat with a bat in the face for 10 minutes. Like, it was bad. And since then, since that second Cain loss, he's only fought once a year. He fought once in 14, once in 15, and once in 16. So, I mean, that could be a good thing. Like, a lot of people would call that inactive. Like, he's only fighting once a year. He'll have a ring rust or whatever. But for him and the beatings he's taken, and he's 33 now, maybe that time off helped. I don't know.
I can't believe he's younger than me. Fuck. Like, he just seems so much older. And I'm a drug addict who drinks a lot. And that's really
sad. He was born January 30th, 1984.
Fuck. That poor son of a bitch.
Yeah, you're doing much better than he is.
I mean, it just goes to show people, you put all kinds of, you know, liquids and chemicals in your body, then it's way better for you than getting punched in the face a couple times. Don't get in fights.
Couple other things you have in common with JDS. He is Catholic, and he's also divorced.
Really? He's divorced?
According to Wikipedia, yeah.
They have no reason to lie. The internet's always accurate.
Absolutely.
He's probably more Catholic than I am, though. Let's be honest.
Wonder what he did for Lent. In the co-main event, we've got Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Jessica Andrade for the strawweight women's title. Joanna's kind of dominated the division since they created it for the most part. She wasn't the first champ. She was the second champ. But she, I think, has the most wins in women's UFC history. She has now gone, I think, 7-0 in the UFC. She's also got the most title defenses for a woman as well. She passed Ronda with her last title win. The one thing I've noticed with her is she's not finishing fights anymore. She's gotten a decision with Letourneau, Gadela, and Kolakiewicz. And again, she's fighting the best women in the division. It's understandable. I mean, GSP had that stretch where he won all his fights by decision as well. But the difference between her and GSP is she's taking a lot of shots in these fights. They're almost all standing. She's getting punched in the face a lot. She's getting beat up, and she's putting miles on her body. And she's going into this fight against probably the hardest hitter ever in the strawweight women's division, in Andrade, who's actually moved down from 135. And she's gone 3-0 at strawweight with wins over biological passport Jessica Penne, Joanne Calderwood, and Angela Hill. I guess the big question is, can Andrade get inside and rock Joanna? That's a big question. Is she going to be able to land a big shot and take advantage of it? Because technically, Joanna's the better striker.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a point fight, Joanna wins, and it's a rout. And I'm a huge Andrade fan. Like, I love Jessica Andrade. I've loved her for a long fucking time. I love the way she fights. I think she's a cool person. I don't know why I think it, but I do. Like, I just do it. Like, she seems really nice. And when I saw that she's a really big, fat wife, I liked her even more.
Do you know she was in the first ever lesbian... lesbian versus lesbian fight with Carmouche. It was the first in UFC history, first two openly gay fighters against each other.
Actually, I would guess that if I look back, I probably mentioned it because I like stuff like that.
I love so lesbians fighting.
But, I love her as a fighter. I think she's entertaining. I think she's just... I don't know, there's something about her as a person I'm really drawn to, and I can't explain it, but I see this fight being out like her fight with Angela Hill, which, when it happened, I said that was the greatest fight in women's MMA history, and I actually kind of believe that still, but she couldn't finish Angela Hill, and I think Joanna's better in everything, and yes, Joanna got dropped by Carolina Kovacevic back in November, but she also recovered, and she's been so dominant for so long, and she's a cutie too, so I love Jessica. I want her to win. I'm rooting for her, but when you give me fighters at the highest level that exists, and one of them's entire game plan is basically, I will hit them harder and knock them out, that doesn't work at the highest level unless you're a once in all time Mike Tyson type of knockout artist. And we saw with Angela Hill, that Jessica Andrade is not that type of once in a lifetime crazy power. And I think that type of thing, that type of fighter style loses eventually. And I think Joanna retains her title over five rounds, but she still retains it.
Sounds good to me. Then we also have an interesting fight at welterweight with Damian Maia versus Jorge Masvidal. This could be a number one contenders fight for the welterweight title. Tyron Woodley says he's training for a fight in July and it hasn't been announced. Obviously, that would be a very quick turnaround for either one of these guys. But both of them probably want that title shot and both of them want the money. So maybe if one of them gets out unscathed, they could obviously go on to fight Woodley in a couple months. But it feels like it's pushing it to me. Either way, Maia is obviously known for his jiu-jitsu game, submits guys left and right, destroyed Carlos Condit. And then you got Masvidal coming up from lightweight and is on a streak of his own, most recently knocking out Cowboy Cerrone. This is also the fight Masvidal claims he was put into because the UFC management want him to take out Maia and don't want Maia to get a title shot, which sounds insane because Maya's got to be the heavy betting favorite on this fight. I haven't looked it up, but Maya's ground game is so good. You would think Maia would be able to take a guy like Masvidal, who's much smaller down, and kind of have his way with him.
Yeah, I mean, this is a win-win for me because if Masvidal wins, it'll be kind of cool. Like, oh, look at him. He stepped it up. He beat the bigger guy. He's just, Cerrone, but with, some Latino blood in him. It's great. But, what Damian Maia did to Carlos Condit will never leave my head. Mm-hmm. And what I've seen him do to Rick Story or, just countless guys, and he's a guy that was a world-class title challenger at 185, and some guys move down a weight class and they don't do well because the weight cut fucks them up or whatever, but he's looked even better at 170. He's just going to grab Masvidal and drag it on.
I would think. Yeah, I would think so, too.
And I like Masvidal. I think almost anybody else he could do very well, but Damian Maia is just fucking scary son of a bitch. Unless he's cracked and everybody gets old, blah, 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 he's going to fucking boa constrictor this shit and tap him out in under 5 minutes.
Maia is 39, so that could be something. You never know when that fight's going to happen. It could be this one. But Masvidal's confident as fuck, too, though. If you've seen any of his interviews leading up to this, he's like, I've got great wrestling. This guy can't take me down. It's just like his like a normal guy would be like, well, if he takes me down, he'll get back up. He's like, he ain't taking me down. It's not going to happen.
He's Trump. Maybe. It's Trumpian. It's the Trumpian way these days. If you believe it will happen. And you know what? Work for Trump. So maybe Jorge Masvidal is the Cuban welterweight cage fighting version of Donald Trump.
The thing
probably
with Maia as well is he is now 8-2 at welterweight, right? His only two losses were decision losses to Rory McDonald and Jake Shields. A lot of people thought he won that Shields fight. It was a split decision. It was all grappling on the ground. And it's like those are the only guys he's lost to. During his career, he's beat Condit, he's beat Matt Brown, he destroyed Gunnar Nelson, Neil Magny, John Fitch, Rick Story, Don Young Kim. He's beaten a lot of really, really good guys and doesn't get the credit for it. Chael Sonnen, Nate Quarry, Jason McDonald back in the day. Like, he's beaten really, really good guys and doesn't get that credit he deserves because he's quiet and he doesn't have necessarily a good look where he catches people's eyes. He looks like somebody's dad going in there to fight, but he's really fucking good.
You fucking sold me. I mean, I love a jiu-jitsu guy anyways, but fuck is he good. Damian Maia wins his shit by submission. Rear naked choke, everybody.
We will see. I wouldn't necessarily bet on that, but it's totally plausible. I don't see Masvidal winning by rear naked choke. I do not see that. Before that, we have another fun featherweight fight with Frankie Edgar versus Yair Rodriguez. And this, to me, is one of those fights where I use this analogy a lot, but it's a generational thing. Is Rodriguez on the upswing and Frankie's on the downturn? I mean, this could be, I don't know if it's a number one featherweight contender fight, but it probably is. If Yair walks through Edgar, I could see Yair getting the winner of Aldo and fucking guy from Hawaii, Max Holloway. Swanson. Holloway. Oh. Aldo and Holloway, right?
Fuck. I thought I had
Cub Swanson. I don't think Cub Swanson's getting a title shot off that Lobov win. Anywho, I guess the big question is, how good is Yair? Can he compete with Frankie's wrestling and ability to mix it up with the boxing? And has Edgar lost a step? I mean, he's been in the UFC a long, long time now. He's taken a lot of beatings. And maybe this could be the beginning of the end for Edgar.
Yeah, I think this will be like an okay fight. I feel like when you look at it, you go, oh, Rodriguez and Edgar, this would be really great. But it probably won't be. It'll be very, very technical. Frankie is just so good at what he does. But, and yes, he'll get old, and eventually his fast twitch muscles will go. But even if they do, he's a vet.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bullshit thing 90% of the time, but his heart is legit.
Oh, yeah.
What he did with Gray Mirror, like, if there's anybody in the world that I would favor to get, you know, cracked in the head by a baseball bat from a vicious CIA black ops operative, it's Frank Yeager. So he can take anything Yair has to offer. But, you know, youth is winning a lot of times at the end of the day.
The one thing I noticed when they were had their standoff today at those pressers or whatever the hell they were doing, Yair's a lot bigger. A lot bigger, like.
Well, that's the case for every Fiegger. He's just a small.
Right, but I also noticed it with like the Penn fight. Yeah, Yair's a big fucking featherweight. Like, he's big for that weight class.
Well, I mean, you know, he fucked up lightweight. Mm-hmm. So I mean,
that's true.
You're right, though. And I do think that Yair being, look, it'll probably be a great contest because if Yair can deal with the wrestling of Frankie, he'll probably win. It won't be exciting. I think I would bet the farm that this goes a distance, and I would bet on Yair to win by a very, you know, I don't want to say controversial, but decision where people are like, okay, it happened, and then we'll all move.
Yeah, I mean, the memory I have, too, of Edgar's last fight with Stevens, I wasn't real impressed. Like, I feel like the old Frankie Edgar would have beat Jeremy Stevens. Instead, he got, like, rocked and almost lost the fight. I mean, there's only so many times you can get rocked and not lose a fight. And this could be a one. If gun to my head, I'm picking Yair. Then the opener was supposed to be, I don't know if you saw this, Sergio Pettis versus Henry Cejudo, but Cejudo's out.
Son of a bitch, did he fucking get fat again?
He's claiming he suffered a hand injury.
Oh, fuck you, you fucking fat, dumb piece of shit. You don't get a fucking... Fuck you, Cejudo, you piece of shit. I hope you die of AIDS.
I mean, he'll die of something eventually.
Maybe.
You think he'll live forever?
It's possible.
Yeah, let me see if I have an up-to-date thing, because that did sound weird. Because, again, Cejudo was there in town for the face-off today. They squared up. Let's see. Pettis will receive his show money and doesn't have to make weight, sources say. A hand injury has forced Cejudo out of the fight, which is really weird because you would have thought he would have known that before he flew to Dallas. Well, he might have driven. I don't know how he got to Dallas, Texas. But, like, why everybody go there for this fight? Cejudo's camp, Pettis' camp and team all had to go out there for this fight. And it's not like he hurt his hand today.
Maybe he did.
What could he have done to his hand today? It's not like he's training today. Like, what the hell?
All right. Is Henry Cejudo in Dallas? He's in a hotel, right?
Yes. Presumably.
and he has his hotel with a high-definition television, which not everybody has one. That HD television that he has numerous movies to watch, including movies of an adult variety. And when he watches those adult variety...
You know what? I'm going to stop you because I found a statement here, and I think we all already know where you were going. He says, I really want to apologize to the fans and to Sergio Pettis for this unfortunate event. About 2 weeks ago, I injured my hand sparring. Not what you were alluding to. And went to the doctor to get it examined after I was...
I was a little
bit. He was watching porno sparring in his hotel room.
He's a homo.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what that... Well, I know what homo means, but I don't know what you're trying to say. About 2 weeks ago, I injured my hand sparring and went to the doctor to get it examined that I was unable to grapple or punch. The doctor looked at x-rays and informed me my hand wasn't broken, so I assumed it was just bruised or sprained. I stopped using my hand for the next week and a half to allow it to rest as much as possible, and I had multiple PRP treatments as well as an ultrasound in hopes of breaking up any buildup or swelling. After arriving in Dallas on Tuesday evening, I hit mitts with my striking coach to get my timing down, and after I threw my first punch, a sharp pain shot through my wrist and hand. My team and I contacted the UFC to see if a cortisone shot would be allowed. The UFC sent me to a hand specialist, and he told me I had a cyst in my wrist, as well as a ruptured capsule with the possibility of a tear in the ligament. He informed me the cortisone shot could possibly do more damage than any benefit and told me it would be insane to fight. He contacted the UFC doctors and informed them that my wrist and hand were unfit to fight this Saturday.
Yeah, so
you think he's fat?
I think he
was jerking off in his hotel room. There's so many possibilities. Who knows?
No, I'm gonna go with the he got caught up in the China porno. That's all. It happened. Nobody gets fucking injured with whatever. There's some horseshit thing, and I don't care. Fuck them. Fuck you, Cejudo. That was going to be a good fight, you dumb bitch. You're going to get schooled by a... I don't really like Sergio, but... Fuck. I don't care. Fuck you.
I wanted to see that fight, too. I thought it was a good fight, and I want to see where Pettis was and if he was going to make that jump up and move up to, like, title contention. And Cejudo is a real test for anybody at flyweight. He's probably the third best flyweight in the world. Some would say the second best. A lot of people thought he won that Benavidez fight. So, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe his hand was screwed up, and maybe it's a true story because the details he gives are pretty – there's legitimate details there. Usually when it's a fake story, like I'm going to come in at 8 pounds overweight – just say I couldn't make the weight cut, and you work a deal out with Pettis.
He's a liar.
He might be. He's also an Olympic hero, goddammit.
Yeah, Olympians are known liars. Michael Phelps told us he did not smoke marijuana.
There's a guy who's definitely clean. So now the opener of the main card, we've got former WSOF middleweight and light heavyweight champ David Branch taking on Christoph Jotko in the opener. Any thoughts on that fight?
Nope.
Great. The prelims, for anyone who's still listening at an hour and 48 minutes in, are going to be on FX. Not FS1, not FS2, but FX. So be aware if you're trying to find it and you can't. It's one of those once a year, once every 2 year prelim cards on FX. We've got Eddie Alvarez versus Dustin Poirier in the main event of the prelim card on FX. Big fight for Alvarez, who's obviously coming off that Conor McGregor loss back in November. And Dustin Poirier is always a game fighter. He's always been a ranked guy at featherweight and lightweight. He's coming off a win over Jim Miller. So a fun fight, should be an action fight, but definitely one of those fights Alvarez needs to win if he wants to stay in the mix at lightweight.
Yeah, I would for Alvarez, but like a 60-40 type of deal, because they're both well-rounded. Alvarez has shown the willingness to make it boring to win, and sure. That's probably to his advantage, so they'll probably win that way.
Okay. Yeah. Try and just keep it up against the cage, wrestle, that sort of thing.
He's going to wrestle fucking against
the cage. The rest of that undercard, there's not a whole heck of a lot on there. Chaz Skelly versus Jason Knight, featherweight fight, which is two decent guys at featherweight. Knight has looked good. He's a younger guy. I want to say he's from, like, Alabama or somewhere down south like that. And then the rest...
ECW.
That, too. He used to manage the Pitbulls. But I know his last fight was pretty fun against Alex Caceres. I remember that fight. He won by rear naked choke. Again, not really a name yet, but he's on a 3-fight win streak in the UFC. And Skelly's been around a while in the UFC. I know he used to train with Johnny Hendricks. I don't know if he still does, but in the UFC, he's 6-2. So another decent guy. Yeah, but it's all against guys you don't even know. His two losses, one is a majority decision to Mirsad Bektik, and the other one's a unanimous decision to Darren Elkins. So it's not like he's getting knocked out or subbed. I mean, he's never been finished in his career, and he's 17-2 now. So just kind of a guy who's always been under the radar, but fight to watch. I mean, It'll be an interim fight because Knight's a lot younger and kind of has a little bit of a rep building coming up. Other than that, the rest of the prelims are pretty much not going on.
Courtney Casey.
Yeah, Jessica Aguilar. But yeah.
It's a Dolly Parton.
Top heavy?
Really, really top heavy, but that top is really fucking good. Like, the part of the show that you have to pay for, totally fucking worth it. And, I mean, fuck you, Cejudo, you dickhead. Like, this show was, like, I couldn't believe it. Like, every fight on the pay-per-view was pretty fucking good. Now we have David Branch, no one gives a fuck. But we still have Eddie Alvarez, and, you know, that's a really good, and Poirier, that's a good fight for a main event on FX, because that's probably some bullshit car driving thing or something on Saturday, but yeah, it's it's not the worst show ever, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, it's a great card. It's a great main card, absolutely. I mean, if you've got Eddie Alvarez and Dustin Poirier on prelims, you've got a pretty strong show.
Yeah, and unless it's only because Henry Cejudo's a dickhead. You stupid asshole. You win your gold medal and you just do a lot of drugs and drink a lot and fuck women. And I'm just making shit up.
You want to do stuff for a couple minutes here?
You know
what? All right. Maybe sometimes you get tired. I don't know.
Well, even if I'm tired, I'll take it. I'm a woman.
I didn't know that, but that would make sense. So the big news, obviously, in the world of politics and U.S. government yesterday broke that the director of the FBI, James Comey, was terminated by President Donald Trump yesterday after Trump conferred with Attorney General Sessions. This is a particularly bad look for Trump, who is under investigation by the FBI for his possible ties to Russia, which nothing's been confirmed there. But when you're under investigation by the FBI and you fire the guy who runs the FBI, you're going to take a little bit of heat for it. Historically, it's an unusual move. I think Clinton did it in 93, but other than that, that's been the only time an FBI director's been fired. His timing probably couldn't have been much worse. Today he met with a guy from Russia. He's just...
That is 2 out of 4, by the way. Of the last four yep. presidents, 2 out of 4 fired the FBI mm-hmm. director.
So what's the deal? The FBI director gets like a 10-year window? Like they've got the job for 10 years typically? How does that work?
They, from my understanding, they get appointed for a 10-year mm-hmm. term. They're with the idea that they'll be nonpartisan and above the fray and all that. And can't lie. Like, I think Comey was.
Right. Well, the thing that's interesting with Comey, he was originally a Bush guy, right? Wasn't he like deputy attorney general or something?
Just based on the timeline, he probably would have been, so sure.
No, I'm pretty sure. I mean, Bush was the one who got him not into the federal government, but I think he was like deputy attorney general, and then Obama made him, you know, the director of the FBI. So, I mean, it seemed like both at certain times throughout his tenure in government, both Democrats and Republicans seemed to respect him at different times, unless he was doing something that hurt that party. When he was going after Hillary with the emails with Wiener and all that stuff, Democrats disliked him, liberals disliked him, said it was a smear campaign and it cost Hillary the election. Then when he's investigating Trump, which is kind of his job, I mean, as director of the FBI, that's sort of what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to make sure everything's on the up and up. Now, Republicans who were cheering for him, Trump included, who said Comey did a great job with Hillary and did the right thing and took a lot of guts to do it, now is firing him during the time he's investigating Trump. It's just like it's a crazy story, and I question whether or not anything will really come of it, because Trump seems to be Teflon. He can say and do anything and fire people and say crazy shit, and no one seems to care. And I think that's probably the Democrats' fault, that they aren't more aggressive with things like this, and they kind of back off and acquiesce a lot. But if, like, the shoe was on the other foot and this was Obama or it was Hillary, oh my God, either one of them would already be impeached.
Yeah, none of it makes sense from traditional and historical political perspective. But nothing Trump does makes sense. And I've said before, and I'll say it again, Trump always wins. And I think this is one of these things where if you pay attention and you care, this matters. But people don't. And Richard Nixon was brought down for either the same thing or less or whatever. Like, you look at the shit that Nixon did, nobody would give a fuck today. Like, he would not have been driven out of office because the public morals are different. And, look, Comey pissed off enough people on the left and the right that nobody can really, like, really say, oh, it's a bad decision by Trump. Because all Trump has to do is say to Schumer or Pelosi or Clinton or whomever, hey, remember a couple of months ago, not even years ago, like 3 or 4 months ago, people were like, oh, he needs to go, he's partisan, blah, blah, blah. Now, do I think that Trump did any of this for appropriate reasons? No. But it doesn't matter because Trump wins, and this is a non-issue. This is a beltway issue. This is something that people who are into politics give a fuck about. Your average person doesn't know shit about
that. Yeah, almost people don't even know who Comey is.
Exactly. And the moment it happened, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, Nixon Saturday night and all this stuff. But it's really not, because Comey, on both sides, people had a very good, justifiable reason for why Comey should go. Now, I, as an attorney, I actually didn't think he should go. I think he did a pretty good job. I think he was very fair-minded in his approach to everybody. I think he was, you know, in a shit-ass situation. But I also understand politically he has to go, and that's the deal. And the only thing I can kind of say in favor of is, if he is in bed with Russia, there's no way he gets exposed, because this just brings more attention to him. And if he's not, well, this is probably the right move to make for the quote-unquote good of the United States and blah, 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 even though I don't give a fuck about any of that, because I think that they'll just replace one Ivy Leaguer with another, and I hate them all.
Yeah, the thing that gets me is, like, it looks so shady. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, and again, I don't want to say he's getting away with something, because I don't know what the fuck he's got going on with Russia. There's no way for me to know. Sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. But a lot of these things, like I question how serious they are. Like, even the shit with Hillary, like, she's getting pummeled for using the wrong fucking computer. And it's like, it's just a question of how much one side wants to push and how big of a pain in the ass they want to be about it. And it's like, liberals just, and the Democrat side just let shit, I feel like they let shit go. And the Republicans and conservatives, well,
they don't. No, they don't. No, because
if the give me a second here, though. If Hillary had won an election and there's a probe into her with ties with Russia and she fires the director of the FBI, you think that would just blow over? Like, probably will with Trump?
What I will say is that I have heard so many Republicans over my life, and I'm only 34, but I've been 2 decades plus involved in this shit because I was brought up that way. Republicans always think, ugh, we just let the Democrats get away with murder. We let them not have to answer for shit. We are above the fray and all that shit. And I hear Democrats saying the same thing nowadays. I think both sides overestimate their
magnanimousity.
I thought I was going to do a fucking show with my brother earlier today, so I'm like, I have to get liquored up beforehand. Then he bailed. But anyways, yeah. Everybody thinks they're doing the right thing, and I think they are, and I also think that truth is always in the middle, and I think the truth is, yeah, probably some people from Trump's shit did something they shouldn't have done, but it wasn't horrible, because I look like General Flynn. He's a general. The dude was, like, at the highest level of all military. He may have had some shit with Russia. Maybe he got some money. But push comes to shove, I don't think he's selling America out for Russia. And he probably, doesn't mean he didn't do anything wrong, legally and all that shit. Probably not a bad guy. And I always have this image in my head of Trump as, like, someone like me, where he's like, he's not a bad guy, because he's not a politician. He's really not. He just looks at this from this weirdo outsider perspective, where he's like, you know, somebody said something stupid, I'll let it. Or, oh, he says something really stupid, all right, let's punch him. He's the ultimate pragmatist.
Yeah. Again, it depends what, I guess, what's going on with Russia, ultimately, if there's anything. Like, I don't even know what that means. Like, is the weirdest part of it. Like, he might have ties to Russia. Like, to me, that still hasn't been made clear what he's even, like, being accused of. So you give him the benefit of the doubt. And I'm okay with that. But I just think back to, like, Clinton and Bill Clinton, not Hillary, getting impeached. You know, obviously he lied on the stand. And I get that. But if Trump did that, nothing would freaking happen. You know what I mean? If he was accused of cheating on Melania or whoever his wife is right now, and he lied about it on the stand, he'd be like, hey, what was I supposed to do? I'm sorry I did it. And people would be like, all right, it's just Trump being Trump. And I just feel like there's a difference there with Trump for whatever reason. It's like he can get away with anything, when other politicians can't always get away with everything.
Well, I think a lot of it is he gets away with it because Bill Clinton did.
Yeah, but I mean, they tried to nail Clinton, and it didn't happen.
The Republicans tried to nail Bill Clinton, and they probably overstepped their reach a little bit. But when you look at what Clinton did by today, 2018 standards of feminism, Bill Clinton was a rapist because he was a man in a position of power talking to a very young woman who's like, you know, 20 years his junior. He's like, hey, how you doing? You want to have sex with me? And then she did. And let's face it, there's no way in fucking hell that she only blew him. And if she only did, somebody else fucked him. And that's fine, whatever. That's the nature of the beast. But by today's standards, we would be like, oh, look at that. The guy, the man in the position of power. And he hit on Monica Lewinsky, the 20-year-old intern making no money who just wants to rise up through the ranks. You put that shit in a Fortune 500, everybody in the world would be like, yeah, he took advantage of her. But when it came to Bill Clinton, we're all like, eh, whatever. And once that happened, everything Donald Trump has done, people are like, yeah, he said grab the pussy. Let's face it, Bill Clinton, under oath, basically admitted to grabbing the pussy. So there's none of that matters. Because the moral authority bullshit came from the right. You know, the Democrats never claimed to be the party of traditional God-fearing, I love Jeebus and all this horse shit.
Mm-hmm.
That was yes. Republicans. And they stuck to Clinton, and I think they overreached, but who gives a fuck what I thought? It was like 13 or 14 when it happened. But they went along with Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is a man that has three wives. Whether he grabbed pussy or not, I know he grabbed pussy. I know he grabbed some 21-year-old snatch, and she liked it, and he was like, yeah, she likes it. I don't think he ever raped anyone, but he definitely was like, yeah, I'm rich, I'm powerful, they'll fuck me. And he fucked them. And it's a natural progression of where we came from in the mid-90s. So it's just life these days. And it doesn't matter if it's good or bad. It is what it is. And that's why The Rock will be president next time.
Well, that was going to bring me to my next point. The Rock said in an interview, I think today, I forget what it was with, but running for president in 2020 is a real possibility. Can you imagine that? How did we get in a point where two guys who have been on multiple WWE wrestling shows could be debating to be president of the United States? Like, The Rock would probably have a shot at getting the nomination with the way the United States and this world is right now. Because if you can get enough people out to vote for you, and like the general population who, like we said, don't even know who Comey is or really knows what's going on, I'd vote for The Rock. I like his movies. He seems like a good guy. I'd vote for him. And people watch him in the debates, and he's funny, he's charming, he's got that charisma that is next level that nobody can really touch. Who the hell knows?
No.
If Trump can get elected, why can't The Rock?
It's a whole new ball game. I don't know how things work. I've said it with Trump many times, which is he always wins. I don't know why. I don't know how, but he does. So eventually you have to accept that either you're insane or the world is. And I'll guess that the world is not, so which means I'm insane. The Rock isn't going to do it because I think The Rock loves playing, some dickhead in Fast and Furious 37. But
he seems like a guy who really cares about like his legacy, though. I might just be making that up, but I feel like he's the type of guy who would want to be like, you know what, I can do this. I've made enough money. Now I want to help people, and I do air quotes while I say that. And maybe he's got the the desire and drive. It's like everything you see him, he's either working out or he's flying around, going to movies. Like he seems like the type of guy who works 24/7 and is always on the grind and would want to do it. He seems like he's got that desire and that hunger, and it's just bred into his nature. Whether or not he really does it, who the hell knows? It could just be he's got the new Baywatch movie coming out and he's trying to be in the press.
Yeah, that's probably it. He has a giant summer blockbuster in the waiting. But, I mean, to me, the big difference is that Trump was able to sell himself on, I am a successful man. The Rock's going to be like, I did some goofy movies that you like. So I think The Rock needs, he actually needs to like be a mayor or mm-hmm. governor or whatever. Yeah. Like Trump didn't need that. Trump could just be like, hey, I'm a billionaire. Have you seen my fucking wife? Exactly. Let's make this shit happen. Rock doesn't quite have that because he's a nice guy. Trump isn't. He's mean. He's kind of bitter. The Rock only works when you're like, hey, that'd be the greatest neighbor I ever had. And, you know, but who fucking knows? I didn't think Donald Trump would do it, so what's wrong with The Rock?
I want to see those debates. I want to see Rock versus Trump in debates. Like, I can't even imagine what that would be like. Like, I hope there's a people's eyebrow.
Well, yeah.
Every time Trump says something like super dumb that you would think would lose a normal person the election, Trump... The Rock just does the people's eyebrow. That would be awesome.
Well, the rational, logical explanations, you're right. But if the two of them ever actually did debate, that would mean The Rock would be the nominee. That would mean The Rock has not gone through several multiple year trial by fire. Who's not as prepared. And people are like, look, he's just doing this wrestling shit. That man is the president of the United States, and he fucked up North Korea. Let's vote for him.
I wonder if Trump will argue where The Rock was born, because he was probably born in Hawaii, right?
That or Tennessee, but Trump, of course Trump would.
He's like, oh, that guy doesn't look American.
Exactly. That's some bitch because he looks like he was born in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and America has nothing to do with the Pacific
Probably
Ocean.
A terrorist. On to other news. Any other thoughts on Trump? He's going to be in office a while longer. Huh?
Maybe, but yeah.
In some brighter news, there was this story. I don't know if we ever talked about this on the show. But this kid named Carter Wilkerson. Tweeted Wendy's, which has probably the best Twitter account of all time. If you haven't checked out Wendy's on Twitter, I highly recommend it. He said, yo, Wendy's, how many retweets for a year of free chicken nuggets? And Wendy's retweeted back 18 million, and he tweeted back 11 seconds later, consider it done. He has gotten nowhere near the 18 million tweets. If you're ever on Twitter, that's an insane number of tweets. It's like not even feasible based on the number of users. That's Wendy's just quick replied that and figured it would never go anywhere. But the kid has set the record for most retweets in the history of Twitter, beating the Ellen DeGeneres picture of them. I think it was at the Emmys or whatever, some award show where it was her and Bradley Cooper and a bunch of actors and actresses and stuff, and that had over like 3 million tweets. Well, he surpassed that. It's at 3.4 million retweets, and since he set the record, Wendy's is now going to give him a year supply of free chicken nugs.
Well, another millennial getting a participation trophy. They said 18 million. He got 3, and they said, here's a couple of chicken nuggets, you dumb son of a bitch. It's embarrassing. This is why America is going to fall, because we can't tweet enough, and it's just awful. Wendy's is a great public steward, a great corporate lover of America, should not encourage this kind of half-assed laziness. He had months to go. He could have got that 18 million. but he didn't, and they're going to give him their fucking spicy, delicious chicken nuts for free for a year just because he said, consider it done. This is un-American. Fuck you, Wendy's, you ginger bastard.
They also donated $100,000 to the DTA. Do you know what that is?
DTFA. Down to fuck always.
It's the Dave Thomas Foundation.
Is this for fucking, like, the kids that no one wants? Like, oh, we're going to adopt?
Yeah, it is an adoption thing. It's dedicated to finding homes for children in foster care. But Dave Thomas is the guy who owns the company. It's like, I know, but he, whatever. He had a heart attack, go figure. Eating Wendy's your whole life would cause a heart attack. But that's like Tom Brady taking the donation money from the group he works for. It's like, you're going to donate to a group called the Dave Thomas Foundation in honor of this kid when it's the guy who owned the company for years? Like, it doesn't even make any sense.
They're giving themselves money for kids that nobody loves.
All right, so at least they got their chicken nuggets, I guess.
I do like the ginger, though, so that's good.
Interesting enough, this kid was also on Ellen last month, and they were talking about it and whether or not he'd set the record.
Okay.
They both may be gay. I'm not sure what he's up to when he's not on Twitter trying to get nugs. But at the time he was on the show, she gave him a year's worth of Ellen-branded underwear and a television, but threatened to take the gifts back if he passed her with the retweet record. Jid, after surpassing his goal, Wilkinson tweeted to her, "Hey, Ellen, sorry about that, but can I still keep my TV and underwear?" So the kid's got a sense of humor, at least.
I would have fucking taken all the underwear, rammed up my ass a little bit, get it all dirty and disgusting, and sent it back to her and be like, "Sorry, I made you a promise. Here's your dirty drawers."
That would be interesting. Also in the news, I know we get hung up on Boston sports sometimes, but these things obviously just come up in my news feed and they catch my eye. You probably don't even remember because 10 years ago, but the Celtics won the NBA title with Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Rajon Rondo.
Oh, I remember it a lot because it was the bullshit championship where they're like, "We're a homegrown Celtics bullshit team." It's like, you fucking just traded a bunch of guys and created like the original, you know, dickhead NBA player is going to come together way before the Heat did it and the Warriors do it. You're the original team of selfish dickhead superstars.
Yeah, Ray Allen was another one. But basically, the 08 Celtics didn't get as far into the playoffs or whatever, and Ray Allen left after that season, and he signed with Miami, went on to win the NBA title with Miami. He's got that classic Game 6 three-point shot that tied the game up and put it into overtime and forced the Game 7 that the Heat went on to win over the Spurs. But the main guys from that team, like Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce and Rondo and Big Baby and Kendrick Perkins, all got together. Apparently, Garnett has like his own like TV show where he talks about basketball or whatever. Basically, all five of them started whining about the way Ray Allen left the team and went to Miami. Most of the guys wish he had given them a heads up before leaving the team and did not like how he parted ways with Boston. And like in my Facebook feed, obviously, it's mostly people from around here, Massachusetts. And everybody's like, "Yeah, Ray Allen's such a dick. He shouldn't have left that way. He should have called him." It's like, these guys are grown men who are millionaires, who make money playing basketball. It's like, you're going to cry and whine about Ray Allen leaving the team and not, like, he owes you guys nothing. And it's like 10 years later and you're still crying about this. It's like, it was just so sad to me and pathetic. It made me like really dislike Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett at like a different level than I have in the past.
It's probably why so many athletes end up poor, because you have tens of millions of dollars. You've already achieved your championship. You're the best in the world, and you still have these dumbass beefs a decade later. Let it fucking go. Who gives a fuck? Enjoy your money and enjoy your hot tub.
Yeah, it's just crazy. And it's like he was a free agent. He can sign with anybody. It's like he should give you guys a phone call after playing with you for 2 years. It's just bizarre.
Yeah. I just see Garnett being like, I would have given him $5 million of my salary.
And all those other guys left the team, too. You know what I mean? Pierce and Garnett went to Jersey. Rondo left. I mean, he got, like, shipped out of town. I don't know if he went to Dallas first or where he went, but it was like he hated the freaking coach there. What the hell's his name?
Stevens.
No, the guy before. God, he's the coach for the Clippers now. Like, I'm drawing a blank.
Oh,
Rivers.
Damn it.
All I could think was Philip Rivers. Like, anyway, but the whole team was disassembled, and it's crazy. It's not like they all stayed together and took lower deals and stayed with the team and tried to make it happen with Ray Allen. They all jumped ship eventually or got traded away. I just found that really, like, sour grapes and kind of sad on their part to bury a guy who helped them win and was formerly a friend.
Well, it's Boston sports. That's how it works.
Yeah, I don't know if it's Boston. I think it's just that could happen in any town. It's just odd. It's like, move on. You're all millionaires. It's like life is good. Why bury a guy? You didn't even invite him to the thing because you're still bitter 10 years later and then talk shit about him without him there. It's just like so high school and fucking immature that it was, I don't know, it was a major turnoff for me.
Hey, that's Massachusetts for you.
The entire state is like that, except for me.
Yep.
I'm trying to see, anything else going on in the world?
No.
Nope. Any thoughts on Jimmy Kimmel?
I hope his kid's okay.
Okay. Because he's been ranting and raving about healthcare lately.
Yeah, it's fine. He has a sick kid. That's all I care about. I hope his kid's
okay. Fair enough. All right. I guess that's all I got. If there's nothing going on, we can probably close this one out.
Yeah, we've gone long enough.
All right, great. Well, thank you for listening to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com. We will be back next week, same place, same time.